Joining us this afternoon is Mike Hipsch, the Secretary for Wisconsin's Department of Administration. And you're in Wausau today. So first question, why are you in Wausau?
Well, it's an opportunity to come up and meet with some folks up here. I'm going to be speaking to the Center-Right Coalition a little bit later this evening, but also an opportunity to just stop by and talk a little bit about what the governor's priorities were when he was setting forth the budget and kind of lay the groundwork of where we're going with the next two-year budget, as well as reflect a little bit on where we've come over the last 2 years.
There's been some observations, last budget versus this budget. Mm-hmm. Last time, a lot of big changes, a lot of big cuts, some direction changes, you could say.
Right.
This time around, looks like the surplus that was built up is actually getting spent more this time, and a lot of the dollars are directed to specific projects and programs. Mm-hmm. Any idea why we're not putting a little more money into that rainy day fund?
Well, we've put more money into the rainy day fund than has ever been done in the history of the state. We're at over $125 million in there now. We've actually deposited money three straight years, which has never happened in history. And really what we did when the governor came into office 2 years ago, he was facing a $3.6 billion deficit. In Madison, they had furloughed employees for 2 weeks. They had shifted money from one fund to another. There were unpaid bills. There were a number of things that needed to be resolved. And you're right, we made some big changes. It was a challenging time, but it was really some tough and important decisions that needed to be made so that now we can benefit from the fact that we do have a surplus. We've been able to turn the budget around in just 2 years from a $3.6 billion deficit to over a $400 million surplus. What the governor recognizes is that with that type of surplus, you need to first and foremost invest back in the people and the people who earn that money. And so that's why for the first time in, I think it's 15 years, you're seeing an income tax rate cut. That's what the governor's introduced, is that we are going to actually cut the tax rate for mainly lower and middle income families throughout the state so that they can invest in their families and their communities and local businesses and help Wisconsin's economy grow. So that's really where you're seeing a different priority than we were 2 years ago. We had to fix a horrible mess 2 years ago. Now things are fixed and we can start moving the state forward.
As you look at the budget process, one of the big things that's getting a lot of play on news is the school voucher program. Mm-hmm. And the expansion of that. There are some even within the Republican Party that are not real happy about that expansion.
Sure.
Where are you? Where's the governor with the reasoning behind this expansion?
Well, really, when you take a look at education and what he talked about in his budget address and even in the state of the state, it was the desire to reform education in the state. And it began a couple of years ago when Governor Walker with Superintendent Evers, the superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction, developed that report card process, the system whereby we can assign report cards basically to each one of our schools. And I'm sure you've reported on how, you know, local schools did and where they stand. Well, as with us in class and in school back when we were getting report cards, it's not just enough to get those report cards. You now need to act upon those. You need to figure out what you're going to do about that. And what the governor has done is he has tied more of the money that's going into schools into performance base. Basically, it's not just enough to continue a failing system in some areas, but we need to measure and then reward or assist those areas that need it. And so what the governor has done in his budget is he's putting for those schools that are kind of the A and B schools are exceeding expectations, he's going to invest more money in those so that they can invest that into their teachers or to additional programs or whatever. They'll have dollars that are available for that. For those schools that are failing, those schools that are struggling, he's going to put more money there as well to try and help them turn around. But in those school districts where there are two or more failing schools, he's going to say that those students and those families should have the option to figure out how they're going to get their children educated, because that's really the goal of the education system, not necessarily to maintain a infrastructure that's there in place or defend fiefdoms that may exist, but to make sure that our students are getting the education that's going to be necessary to carry them through life. And so if that means that they need to go into the public school or into a charter school or even into the private school through the voucher system, the governor wants to make that available. And the challenge that we see, why I think you see the governor reacting to it right away, is that in each of those school districts, I think there's 9 in total that under the criteria the governor set forth would be eligible for charter or for choice voucher schools. For those districts, we know that we have at least 1,000 students in each one of those school districts that are in failing schools. We can't simply just turn our back and say, well, we'll get to you when we can. We can't continue to write off that generation. We need to give them the opportunity to gain their education that's going to carry them through life today, right now. And that's why the governor is proposing this change in the way we will educate them.
Another thing that's a pretty hot topic in the budget has to do with transportation funding. Mm-hmm. We've heard from various legislators and some other sources that the existing way of paying for transportation is not going to last because there's not enough money in the fuel taxes right. to support the infrastructure. And we've also heard from certain watchdog groups for the taxpayers that some of the enumerated projects are a waste of money, mm-hmm. including the expansion of 90 south of Madison to the Illinois border. What are we really looking at as far as transportation in the future? And are we going to look at these projects and see what's really necessary versus what the trends are?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an excellent question because obviously the infrastructure that we have, our roads and bridges and highways, they are linked directly to the success or failure of your economic system. I mean, if you take a look at the economy right now and take a look at our highway system, I think the study shows that about 80% of all the jobs in Wisconsin are within 4 or 5 miles of a major highway. Major road. And so we recognize that people need to get to work and products need to get to market. So the governor is going to continue to invest in our infrastructure and our transportation system, especially in those major thoroughfares where most of our commerce comes through. But we do need to take another look at how we are funding those projects. And you're right. We rely here in Wisconsin almost exclusively on our gas tax and our registration fee. Well, our friends from Illinois and Minnesota and others who come here help us pay for the gas tax, but the registration fee is all on us. And so what the governor has done is recognize that we need to try to diversify some of that. One of the things he's done in there is take transit, you know, our bus systems in our major cities and move that into the general fund, take that pressure off the transportation budget and continue to fund those within the general fund. So we diversify the sources of income going into our transportation system. He's also recognizing we need to continue to invest in those projects and do it in a way that, as with like the Hone Bridge in Milwaukee or the Marquette Interchange, he's going to borrow to support that infrastructure, those capital improvements, in much the same way you and I would for our house. I mean, if you're going to purchase a house, you're going to borrow and you're going to get a mortgage, or you're going to put on an addition or put on a new roof. You're going to go get a home equity loan or something along those lines. That you're borrowing for capital improvements. But we're taking that one step further because what the governor has also charged us to do is take a look at the excess property, the surplus properties that we have in the state, and figure out whether or not there's a way that we can sell some of that and take that one-time money to pay off those one-time debts, you know, reduce the number of excess property we have to try and pay off the bonding. So while he's got a plan to continue to provide for the infrastructure that's necessary, he's also established a plan by which we will pay that off.
We haven't heard a whole lot about the surplus property that's perhaps going to go back into the open market. Right. What types of examples of that?
Well, the one that gets the most attention, of course, is our power plants. And we have several power plants throughout the state that provide power into our facilities, corrections, university facilities, even in Madison, the state office buildings. And the question has been for better than 20 years, why does the state have its own power plants when obviously we have utilities and other companies that do this for a living? So why are we in that business? Should we get out of it? Should we figure out a way that we can divest ourselves of those plants and sell those to individuals or companies that do that for a living and yet do it in a way that we are going to be able to continue, obviously, a constant supply of that power that's absolutely necessary in our institutions and do it in a way that we are going to save the taxpayers money? We'll be able to sell those properties, use that one-time money to pay down our debts, but then also try to save the dollars that we will have as far as just leasing back or purchasing that power. So that's one of the aspects you're seeing it. But there are other areas where several departments own land. Corrections, as an example, owns land, not prisons per se, but land that they have that could be liquidated. And of course, most notably, the Department of Transportation has often purchased right-of-ways for roads and highways that they thought they may build in years to come. Well, they could own large tracts of land where we do now know that the road, while it was expected to go one way, went another way. All right, well, then let's sell the land off that we no longer need. It's that analysis that you go through first, and then you determine whether or not you can sell some of that excess property that we're holding for no good reason.
We'll get away from the budget for one thing. There's an issue here in central Wisconsin that is really a hot button, especially around the Stevens Point area.
Right.
And that has to do with the state's procurement process and the student information software that the contract was awarded to Infinite Campus, not Skyward of Stevens Point,
right.
on February 1st.
Right.
What I understand is the process is designed to keep political influence away from the purchasing process.
Right.
But there are many who think the process is still flawed to go to a single vendor for an undetermined length of time like this. Can you explain for us why is the contract a single vendor contract and where is this process now?
Sure. I can talk about it in kind of the hypothetical of how we do procurement at the state, mainly because in the specific instance you're talking about with the student information system, that has been appealed right now, and the appeal will go through the procurement agency, which was the Department of Public Instruction. If for some reason any of the players in that do not like the way that appeal comes out, then the next level of appeal comes directly to me, the Secretary of Administration. So since I'm directly going to be involved with that, if it's appealed to my level, I'm not really going to address that area. And I haven't really dug into the weeds of it, just specifically to stay above it and remain apart from it so that I'm ready should the appeal come. Now, let's talk about the procurement system in general. First of all, why do we have a single vendor system? Well, we have a single vendor system in student information because that's the state law. In the budget 2 years ago, Department of Public Instruction recommended and the legislature passed a single vendor system so that when we are out trying to analyze our schools and do a student information system, kind of a grading system, if you will, that they wanted to have one system that we would easily be able to compare apples to apples, not figure out whether or not company A is doing it better or differently than company B, and so how do we compare those? So I think that was the motivation behind what the original plan was. And then finally, you touched on the procurement system. The procurement system we have in the state of Wisconsin is specifically designed, as you said, to make sure that politicians can't go in and say, okay, I'm going to give this to my brother-in-law, wink, wink. You know, that they've avoided that, and the law prevents that from happening. There's a specific prescribed system that is in place whereby you have to judge on merit, you have to judge on the proposals that were in the request for a proposal or the plan that went out. You have to judge specifically on that, and then you win or lose based upon your merit in those areas. And so that is the way the procurement system has been set up. My role, and certainly DPI's role right now, is to determine whether or not the law was followed. And if the law was followed, then the procurement will stand.
Anything we haven't covered?
Well, I think, you know, when we take a look at the way this budget is going to roll out, obviously it's going to go through the public hearing process. I would presume that they'll have one in central or north central Wisconsin, the Joint Finance Committee. I think it's important for people to realize that a budget, like anybody else's, is a priority setting document. You know, for ourselves, our priorities are our mortgage or our rent, and then our clothing, our food, those type of things. And in the same sense, the governor has laid out a priority system in the budget. First and foremost, priority is K-12 education. After that, we provide for those who can't provide for themselves through Medicaid and Badger Care and those type of things. And we will be very interested to hear the legislature's response to the public hearings and obviously continue to work with them as to how they may wish to tweak or change those priorities. But for the most part, the governor has laid out a specific theme that he wants to address in this budget. He wants to make sure that people have opportunity for more prosperity, better performance, and true independence. And that's really what was the theme of the budget that the governor introduced. And it's as we go through the process, I think people will see that we have turned Wisconsin around. We're moving it forward.
Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hibbs joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.